Welcome to What CEOs Talk About. Do you wonder what CEOs talk about behind closed doors? How they bring their vision to reality? How do they overcome and succeed through adversity? We share that and so much more with each episode. Now, let's get started with the show.
Hello, this is Martin Hunter, your host of What CEOs Talk About show, where we talk about translating strategies into frontline operations. Our past guests include guys like Dominic Rubino of the Profit Toolbelt podcast and Cabinet Making Profit System. Try to say that five times quick. Good friend of mine, we go hunting and fishing. Jeff Livingston, Norver Visuals, movie making commercials. I mean, these guys are amazing. Sebastian Nolt of Black Tie Property Services, franchising high-angle window washing. Today's episode is brought to you by Urgio. Urgio is Latin for to urge, a strong desire to drive change, stimulate thought, incite feeling, ultimately encourage action. Matt, have you ever had a visionary CEO at the helm of one of the companies that you've worked for?
Yes, Martin, actually I have.
So often the key to success is translating that vision into frontline operations. Would you say that's correct and accurate?
Yeah, I think that's the hardest part for a visionary CEO.
How do you monetize their vision, right? How do you make what's in their head into dollar bills, which is really what Urgio is about? So if you're that visionary CEO or you're part of a board that has one of these great persons at the head of your companies that you invest in, and you really want that integrator to help you get everything done, that is what Urgio does. They provide fractional CEO services, operational leadership and advisory, and really helping organizations move through growing pains, ensuring that the company is on the right track, both strategically and operationally, so that they can flourish and profit. Urgio has worked with a multitude of companies in SaaS, CPG, mining, transportation, from startup all the way to large multinational corporations. To learn more about Urgio, go to urgeo.ca or email them directly at info@urgeo.ca. Today, Matt Newman, check out that beard. Currently, the Senior Vice President of Sales at the explosive growth company Alpha Foods. 22 years, solid with anything CPG. And I always say Matt is so ready to be the next CEO. So at the end, we're going to get his email. So if you want him to be your next CEO of CPG, give him a shout. All right. So thank you very much, Matt, for being here today. What's on your mind? What do you want this show to be about? What's important to you today?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks, Martin, for inviting me to talk today. One of the things that I find important as a senior leader of an organization or even a frontline leader in an organization is building culture. And culture is an imperative that leaders take a different approach away from a myopic view into a servant leadership model. So that's what I like to pass along is some information, some insight, strategy that we're employing at Alpha and I've employed throughout my career that hopefully will help some other leaders recognize that opportunity.
So why did you pick that? Why is it so important to you?
So I think for me, the biggest opportunity, and it really came to light this year, right, in 2020 with COVID, where everything changed. The ability to have in-person meetings changed, the ability to meet with customers in person changed. So you had to figure out how to build your culture digitally and remotely, and how do you build and instill those cultural values, build relationships, and make people recognize that you're a place where they want to be when this thing concludes or whenever the new normal happens. And I think at Alpha, with us being an explosive growth company and we've doubled and tripled our headcount, culture is a key component that helps us attract key talent. In my past experiences, that's where the success landed and how I attracted the highest level of caliber people. Was talking about the culture and making them believe that they were a fit in the organization and the organization was a fit for them. And that's where you get people that are moving just from job hoppers to people that want to do the work for you, put in the extra time because they believe in what you stand for and what the company stands for.
So when did you, that, I think you said servant leadership, when did you actually, what's the story behind when you kind of went, hey, hold on a second, servant leadership, like, oh, what, first of all, where did you learn the term? And secondly, when did you go, man, this is the key to success. This is what's going to make me a winner and make my team a winner. What's that trigger?
Sure. So it's pretty easy to pinpoint for me as a young leader in an organization. I was thrown into a world where I was being directed by senior leaders instead of empowered and coached and building trust in my skill set. And I recognized that was a gap that I was missing. And so I decided to go back to college, finish my graduate degree. And I wanted to shift my focus from a traditional MBA to actually started with an education master's degree at the great Arizona State University. 1 year in, my company moved me out of Arizona to a new location. And so I was now thrust with, oh my, what do I do with my master's program? And so now behind me, this side, Gonzaga University, Jesuit College in Spokane, Washington, known for their men's basketball team, among other things, was launching a organizational leadership master's degree. And it was getting awards nationally. It was getting recognition worldwide. And so I read about it, learned about it, applied, took the test, got accepted, and implemented that study and have stayed with it since that. And at the time I had three young children. One was 1 year old and I was doing a master's degree program, relocating multiple times with the organization and still making sure that I was focusing on my team. And when I adopted a lot of these philosophies instead of the hammer model of a manager to an empowering leader, I got much better success. And so I've just continued to educate myself, lead, learn, read from other people. And it's worked wonders for me throughout my entire career. So now I pass that message on as a mentor, as a coach, as a leader, as a dad. I pass along that same kind of modeling for my children. Now four teenagers. So servant leadership and helping them understand.
For those who are just listening to the podcast and not looking, Matt doesn't have a hair on his coconut. He doesn't have a hair. So he's lost it all with kids and work and stuff like
that's
that.
That's right. And my beard's gray. So I'm good.
I think when you said manage people, right? A lot of people forget that you manage systems and you lead people. And so as a dad, and I don't want to pick on people who don't have children, but when you have children, it changes a lot. You learn to lead by example. When you catch yourself doing stuff that your dad did or your mom did, and you go, ah, I know what he meant back then, right? Mm-hmm. So
absolutely.
I think that's really applicable. And I think knowing Matt somewhat personally, I know that the Matt you see at work and the Matt you see at home, I'm sure is pretty similar. So you don't have to put on a show at work. You're just who you are, right?
Correct. All right. I mean, servant leadership is a model and a philosophy that it transcends work. It transcends your efforts in life with your friends, with your family, with your neighbors, right? If everyone just takes a model that says, I'm going to put you first, then you get so much more success in life. That is because others are being successful. And so it cascades down, it resonates across, and it just helps, for my opinion, in my perspective, it helps keep the momentum moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. And I think COVID is hopefully bringing some of that to light for people as they're having to change how they engage with folks, how they interact, how they learn from one another. And so if there was ever a moment in my scope to pass along the servant model, it would be now. Right now.
Okay. So let's talk about COVID and servant leadership. So you can't see people, you can't go out and meet people. Mm-hmm. So people say, okay, culture is about how we assimilate the things that we do similar. You know, if I start saying, how y'all doing, you know, from the South. And if I'm from the South, then, you know, you can put assumptions to my dietary likes. You can put assumptions to what I like, what I dislike. So now that it's all here, it's all Zoom,
Right.
Tell me, what have you learned about building culture through a computer screen?
So I would say the first thing, and probably the most important aspect of this new virtual world, is you have to carve time to get to know your people, right? Whether they're your direct reports, your customer, or cross-functional leaders within your organization, because you don't have the water cooler opportunity. So it's just Zoom, dive right in, and you go on spreadsheets or go on a presentation, and there's no time to focus on the person, then you're not going to be successful. You can learn a lot from people when you just look around the background and see what's going on in their life, right? So just like if we were sitting across the desk from a buyer in a corporate office, the first thing we teach young leaders is, or young managers, young salespeople, is to look around, find something you can personally connect on. You can do the same thing on the Zoom screen. People can see, a lot of people don't know Gonzaga, right? Yeah, they see all this stuff. They see all these medals over here. My wife's a runner, right? So there's all these different things that tell people about I am. And I'm not afraid to share that. So I look for the same type of things when I'm engaging with folks. And as a young company at Alpha, we were thrust into this environment where we hired a whole bunch of people we had never met in person. Mm. Everything was on phone or on Zoom. And so we had to get to know people quickly. And so we created opportunities to take away the work environment and create that social engagement. We had happy hours on Fridays, right? Where you just bring a drink to the Zoom screen and talk about what you're going to do and not talk about work. We had a holiday ugly sweater contest. We had a gingerbread decorating contest. I sent out the retail team in their local markets if they felt comfortable to do a scavenger hunt. That had nothing to do with work. Just go out and do what they do, which is get engaged and take them away from this monotony. And it just builds that belief that they're part of something more than just delivering that number.
Okay. So let me ask you a hard question. How do you monetize culture? So I'm a CEO. I'm listening to this podcast. I go, la-di-da-di-da, culture, culture, culture. How does it impact either gross revenue, COGS, or cash flow?
Sure. So, you know, one of the things that I believe is important is that when you build a performance management tool, that you have some hard deliverable KPIs, but then you have some soft transformational skills that are tied to the culture you're trying to build. And when you understand that developing your staff for the future of for themselves or for the future of your organization, it's going to deliver higher results for the company because they're going to be more engaged and want to deliver at a higher level. So then you can put further stretch goals out. You coach and educate them as to why they believe in what you're teaching and telling, and then they go and deliver on those same deliverable KPIs. And it transcends across all channels, right? Not just the sales perspective. Logistics, about finding ways to save the company money if we are empowering them to think about what this brings to them, right? Mm-hmm. So if you get a better work-life balance because you're saving the company money by bringing on a freight forwarder, and it's limiting the amount of scope and work that you're having to do, and now you're leading and managing an outside agency, and it saved the company money. Now we've just hit on all three numbers, right? It's the trifecta.
Matt and I were working on a performance management tool, and so we're coming up with some fundamental behaviors that are attached to the core values. And Matt, I'm gonna put you on the spot here. I can't remember, but one of them was write the check as you own the company or something like that.
I'm a firm believer, and I have been this way since I worked for some of the largest CPG companies in the world. Write the check as if it's coming out of your own pocket, right? So you make a decision financially as if you're the one writing the check. And when you empower people to think that way, they're going to make the best decision for the company. But they have to believe that they're empowered to make the best decision, right? If you come over the top and smash them down and tell them no, then it's all for naught. You empower people to make those calls, coach them through when the decision is made, right or wrong, but coach them, and then empower them to do it again. Now you're elevating your organization, right? Shrinking the middle. So you have your low performers, your mid performers, and your high performers. You shrink the middle and move more people towards the high performers, it's a better opportunity for the organization to be successful.
Effective decisions with efficient systems, right? That's correct. Trust, a lot of people don't understand the power of trust. like creating that circle of safety that you've got means that everybody's got back to back and you're firing at everything that comes outside. So I'm with you 100%. The word that you keep saying is empower, 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 empower. Mm-hmm. Tell me, concrete wise, how do you empower people? How does that look? How do you actively think, okay, this is what I'm going to do to empower my director of sales? How do you do that?
Sure. So one of the things that I have employed for many years is to bring myself into the conversation, but not to provide the solution, right? Mm. To coach them to the solution on their own. I might steer them with open-ended questions, closed-ended questions, steer them a certain direction so that they come up with a solution. But at the end of the conversation, they're making the decision. Mm-hmm. And I'm helping lead them to that on their own, or empowering them to do additional research and come back with their solution. A prime example, we launched our D2C platform at Alpha recently during COVID. Initially we had, I don't know, probably $1 million in salary on calls. And we decided, Martin and I actually decided that it was time to empower a work group. And once we empowered that group to go and do the research, come up with solutions, provide the SLT with what their decisions were or what direction they were going to, our D2C platform and work group became so much more effective and efficient, and calls became quicker, to the point. We freed up time on the calendars and empowered those three individuals to make decisions of magnitude that they would not have gotten if we had not empowered them to do those decisions. And so we led them down that path, coached them through the first couple work group solution opportunities, and then they believed in themselves and they ran with it. And we had a super successful launch. And we continue to change and empower those three folks to lead that team. And that is just a case study of what is possible. And mm-hmm. we shared that amongst our SLT on what is possible when we believe in our individuals. And I think that's a big piece of empowerment, is that they have to believe that you believe in them.
Okay, awesome. Now tell me, where is this going wrong? And what I mean by that is, give me an example of what not to do, not that you've done it, but that you've lived and you go, damn, that was backwards. Fill in the blank, right? So have you lived it? And without pointing the finger at anybody, any.
Sure. So I think where the trap falls for leaders or managers, right? And not all managers are leaders. Mm-hmm. And not all leaders are managers. And there is a fine line that mm-hmm. you have to play. I think the trap is when you become too focused on delegating and you Ooh. Remove yourself from some of the concrete decision making, that decisions can be spun and not deliver the most optimal results that then require you to do a little bit of corrective action. Not in a negative way, but just corrective action, right? And fix it. So, which is it's a delicate game to play, to remove yourself, but mm-hmm. not completely. I have lived it in previous companies where I was learning this whole servant leadership model philosophy. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like hands off and just said, oh, well, you can do it. Why don't you do this? Why don't you? And I empowered too far. And they made a decision. It was completely wrong. We dealt with it, but it was not the right call. So, but luckily, you know, as a leader, you got to take ownership of that as well, right? Like, you can't pass the buck.
Yeah,
the person that you empowered, you got to own it. And that's one thing I tell my kids. One thing I tell college students, like, you have to make the decision, right or wrong. You mm-hmm. have to make the decision and own it. Be prepared to take the coaching and development that comes with it. And don't be afraid to make a mistake. And I think that's the biggest piece of empowerment, is we encourage people, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to make a mistake. I'll coach you through it, right? We'll work through it. And it gives them that sense of accomplishment when they go and make a call. It's the right call. And now they're empowered to do more and more and more.
That circle of safety, right? Simon Sinek says it all the time, but that circle of safety, you're creating that safety net for them. You know, hand on the shoulder. Hey, go ahead. Go ahead. I trust you. Do it.
Yep.
And I think you've said it before, guardrails, right? So it's important for those who are listening. I love acronyms because it's years in the military. I love using acronyms, just my brain. So direction, support, and open lines of communication. Provide the guardrails, right? Here's the direction that I want you to take, basically pointing them in the right direction and setting the guardrails, right? If you see a little bit of yellow, stop. If you see a little bit of red on this side, stop. Okay. So number two is support. Provide the right tools and knowledge and experience. If they don't have it, then provide the person or the people that have that to support them doing that. And ultimately having open lines of communication. So if you're in any doubt whatsoever, ring me up, ask me a question, right? So direction, right. Support. So I think you do that very well. Let's talk about dollars. Okay. So you've convinced me I'm the CEO and of this CPG company. I've just brought you on because you're kick butt kind of guy. And I was like, okay, Matt, what is this going to cost me? I trust you. I believe in you. We're building an AOP. What do you want me to invest in? How do you want me to invest in? And tell me that there's going to be an ROI. What's on your mind? What do you say? What do you put forth? I'm not going to hold you against it. but tell me what do you put in your annual operating plan and your strategic plan to help empower and create a culture of servant leadership within an organization? Sell me that, Ben.
Well, here's the thing though, right? So from just developing a philosophy of servant leadership, there's not a lot of cost tied to that unless it's a coaching and development opportunity for your team.
Yeah.
Right? So if your team is not familiar with the philosophy or there's not someone that can lead by example, and be that steward of people first, then that's where the cost comes in. And there's other things like bringing on an outside consultant to talk about how to build culture in a positive model. Franklin, I'll give a plug, Franklin Covey, 7 Habits of Highly Successful People.
Oh, hell. Where is it?
I have personally been.
It's in the library on the other side.
I've been through the program twice, not to date myself, but before everything was on computer and it was a live in person session, and it took 3 days to get through it. And I was a young leader at that time, and I didn't buy into it. I didn't understand it. I took tidbits from it. Second time, much different perspective, right? And there's different ways to provide that coaching, especially now. There's resources out there that are free, or their subscription models. There's podcasts to listen to what other people are doing and how to believe and start to change your perspective, change your lens of perspective of how you see people. To build into an AOP, you have to believe that you have the right staff, the right number of people to allow them to do what needs to be done. And that starts, you know, at the front lines and understanding it. What happens if person A goes out tomorrow, are we prepared to cover them, whether it's a short period of time or indefinitely? And if we're not, then what does that bring on to the organization? So some of it is as a CEO or as a sales leader or as a CFO or anywhere you want to put it, some of it is you have to believe in building for the future. If we're late to the party and you're trying to play catch up, then you're always playing catch up. Sometimes you have to lead from the front in order to be a servant leader and believe in what you're standing for in the company. Because if you believe it, Martin, as a CEO, and that cascades downward, that I believe, and this is what we're doing, and I'm going all out. This is where it starts at the top, and then it just continues to cascade downward. And then your frontline team believes in what they're doing, and they put in the extra effort, turn in the higher numbers or the better results or better engagement at customer service, working better with commands and suppliers, right? It cascades across the entire organization.
Customers, you're right, right? So I just thought, God, customer service, I'm going to ask you this question. For those who are listening and looking at the video, you know, we talk about top down, but it's really front back. Leader should be at the point of the spear, point of the arrow, and knowing that everybody's got, and then when it's time to do the work, you kind of invert that triangle where the CEO's standing in the back watching everybody kind of doing what they're doing. So you're telling me that there's no extra cost. It's not going to cost me anything else to get this empowerment and this culture of servant leadership. Is that what you're telling me there?
Well, I think Newman? there's probably some residual costs of things like, you know, employee empowerment or employee engagement weekend or things that fit your T&E budget. You know, the slush funds, instead of taking a customer to dinner, empower your team to go take their family out and thank them, right? Yeah. Because spouses and kids and partners are all part of this cultural shift as well. And when leaders recognize that their team members' families have as much engaged as their team members, and they share that and they know who their team members' partners and families are, then they deliver even higher results because they believe they're part of something. They're not just a cog in a wheel. That if they fall out tomorrow, they'll replace the next day. And so, yeah, it's time. I'll be honest. I mean, the biggest investment is time. And you have to be willing to spend a little bit of time and get to know your people for who they are, not what they do, but who they are. And sometimes that's the most difficult thing for people, is to give up their own time to do that.
Time, right? Everybody's got 24 hours, no less, no more. What does, you know, there's a famous saying that says, as a parent, spend half the amount of money, but twice as more time for your kids, and your kids will be rich. Right? That's all they want. That's all they want. They want your time. Because they believe in you, they want your coaching, they want your mentorship, they want to spend time with you. So I don't think it's any different within the organization, which in a company, everybody wants to make their boss happy. In one way, shape, or form. The other one, and damn it, I should have monetized this before Sir Richard Branson did, but it's to treat your employees like your customer. So damn it, he said it, and I've been saying it for a while, and I should have put, Virgin. Who's a Richard Branson guy? Virgin, that's not a brand. Right. Just teasing. You don't build a brand by just, I've spoken to Virgin employees and managers and leaders, and they all agree that that is the culture within the businesses. Treat your employees and your team as you would, or even better than your clients.
Yeah, I would say better, so, right? Like you made the comment about the inverse sphere, same thing, right? Everyone wants to please their boss, but every boss should want to please their employees and get to know them and get them to believe that they have a purpose. And the more we can do that, still achieving our goals, you will find greater success in having the achievement level attainable, even when it's difficult. Even when it's difficult, I think back to my days at Nabisco, and we got crazy, crazy numbers. I was managing the largest sales team in the country, and I was just getting these massive load in numbers from corporate. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. We can only do so much, right? But I would tell my team, this is what's happening. This is what they're doing. And then I would tell my senior leadership, my team will run through walls for us. They will. We ask them to run through a wall, they will run through a wall. But you can only ask them to run through walls so many times, right? So there is a finite level of the ask before the leader has to step back and take one for the team and stand up and say, no more, right? Like, this is, I'm standing at the front and my team is behind me, and I'm going to take one and push back where needed. So I think that's an important piece, more for frontline leaders, right? Senior leaders, you might have to stand up to your board. You might have to push back on board member ask and recognize that the boards are always going to push you. The investors are always going to push you. And you have to take a step and say, what's real? What's possible? Mm. What can I ask my team to do and truly have them believe that they can do it?
So let's talk about culture, COVID, and sales.
Sure.
So let's give the CEOs and the people on the board or VCs that have those CEOs, and they say, okay, well, Matt, how do you create a culture of sales? So how do you help your VPs? Because you've got emerging, food services, retail, and in retail, you've got other divisions, which is natural. And what's the other one?
Well, so we have natural, we have MULO, we have mass, all within retail. So we have three VPs, three directors of retail, and then we've got national accounts within food service and two regional sales managers within food service as well. So
okay. These people are seasoned sales team members. They've done it, and I'll use the word pre-COVID, old school, face-to-face, take the plane, go see the client, go see the customer, right? How do you create, what have you done differently, if anything, or what kind of advice do you have for a CEO who's got a decentralized workforce? And because, I mean, Alpha's rocked it, both kept at pace, increased sales. I understand the industry has changed, you know, freezers, people want to stock. Yeah, I get that. But still, you've thrived in this environment. So what have you done to create a culture of sales winning? I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what have you done to make the sales team believe in the culture and perform?
Well, I believe what we have really done from the onset is really build that environment of openness, inclusiveness, working through the ups and downs of COVID, helping share best practices. We've retooled our sales presentation that makes it easier to deliver via Zoom. We have really encouraged more development and connectivity with distributor partners than we had done previously within the organization, pre-me and pre-my team. But we've found different solutions to try to engage with the customer. And the other thing, for those that may or may not have it, is data, right? Like, we have invested in data to help us deliver a fact-based selling story on what's happening pre and post COVID, because everyone had the great success in March. The litmus test is, what did you do in April, in May, in June, in July, right? What did you do post that stock up freezer, stock up pantry, herd mentality of everyone just going out and raiding the shelves? And that's the deliverable. I've got a consumer insights manager that is phenomenal, and she looks for ways to share the information. We have a brand manager that looks for ways to share the story as to the why, right? So many people get focused on just selling the product, and they don't provide the 360 approach to the why, why we're different, why you need this product on shelf, how we're going to bring more customers into your building, and what we're going to do for you, right? Like, customers want to know that. They want to know, how do they keep people coming into their buildings? And that's been the comprehensive approach that we've taken. So we've increased our marketing team. We have enhanced all of our digital social platforms. We have shifted from conventional focus of needing to be an ad and paper circulars to everything being online. We have a team focused 100% on looking for retailer opportunities that is focused on their digital platforms. Do they have load to cart opportunities? Do they have digital coupons that we can send out? Do they have email blasts? We are completely changing the way that we approach the business to engage consumers where they are, which is right here. As you can see, we're here, right? We're online. So it's being willing and able to adjust your mentality. An old school CPG style is probably having the most difficult time, as we're seeing from some of our biggest world-renowned CPG companies. They're cultivating, they're killing lower performing SKUs because they're just trying to ramp up on the items that they know will sell off shelf no matter what. And they're not being flexible in their approach. And young guys like us are coming in and winning. Sorry, a little moxie there. Sorry.
All right. That's all right. No, that's all right. You can pump your chest all you want. You can smash your chest. It's all right. D2C, right? Because that's the way to go, right? So I know that you've struggled a little bit with fulfillment in regards to shipping. I know FedEx. I mean, I'm still waiting for my daughter's rugby jersey that is ordered in November. As we talk about, you know, corporate culture, the consumer's culture is changing as well. So be able to adapt and overcome with all of that. How's the integration? How is it? Is your sales team culture different than the ops culture, different than the finance team's culture, different than a marketing team's culture? Is it important to unify all of that, all those?
Sure, absolutely. So I would say that obviously there's going to be some intricacies that are modified or slightly different. Mm-hmm. But one of the things we are trying very hard to do is not to create silos. And so we have cross-functional calls. We have what's called a digital social hour, which is our digital marketing team has all of our sales team every week to go through what their asks are, what they're looking for. We've built systems in place. I don't know if we can plug greenmonday.com, but
greenmonday.com for sure. Yeah. We'll do that. We'll make sure we send a shout out to Green Monday,
which allows us to put stuff in a system and in a process to allow there to be continuous focus going forward. One of the proudest moments that I have seen so far at this organization is when my supply chain team is on a call for a new product development, and we're talking about pipeline fills 8 months from now. And he was like, wait, what? We're not talking about like 4 weeks from now. We're like, no, we're talking like 8 months from now. And he was blown away that this is the shift that is occurring within the culture of the organization. And it's not just a sales shift, right? It's a marketing shift. Mm-hmm. It's a supply chain, a raw ingredient material purchasing. It's all of it. And that is probably the most important, especially for younger companies that are building their culture, is that cross-functional unilateral approach that allows people to have engagement, not be afraid to pick up the phone and have a conversation instead of hiding behind email. Mm-hmm. Those are important things to build the success for the company and be able to react when the moment presents itself, right? You never want to lose that nimbleness, that entrepreneurial spirit, if in a moment presents itself and you have all the systems, checks, balances in place that you can pivot and make something happen quickly. That would not be possible if we weren't all marching in the same line and in the same direction.
That's right. All you said, music to my ears, functional accountability. Now, for those who are listening, what Matt is saying is not necessarily that you create a flat organization, is that you have a cross-departmental open lines of communication, right? So functional accountability is critical to a successful company. Having a good ratio of accountability is critical to the success. What Matt is saying is that you're connecting the people at the different levels. So who's dealing with this customer, who's dealing with this process, does mean that the CEO, there's 120 people reporting to the CEO and one other person, that's just hell in a handbasket. So, but what Matt is referring to is good communication flow. So not hindering by pride or ownership or saying, this is my department, this is how it's going to work. You empower people to have open lines of communication through. So great. Piece of advice. So let's close this out. What's the one piece of advice? Let's get it back to culture, sales year in sales, and kind of COVID. What piece of one advice? Is there a tool out there? Is there a piece of software? Is there a book? Is there something that you want to say, hey, CEOs out there, servant leadership, CPG, sales, listen to this. It could be one or two or three, whatever, that you'd like to provide to the listeners and say, hey, this is, if you want to learn something, go out there and read this, watch that, or just wise words as well.
Yeah, so to like pinpoint one piece of software or one author would do disservice to so many great authors that are out there that write on this topic. And I don't want to get bad emails from authors that are like, why don't you plug me? So I would just encourage people, if this is a perspective that they believe in or they see value, which I'm 100% behind and I share the message constantly, then do some research, right? Maxwell and Greenspan and Franklin Covey, and there's just a number of people that write along these topics, and educate yourself on it from a sales perspective. Not just sales, right? Sales is much more. Sales is the heartbeat of an organization. Mm-hmm. Sales is what gets people excited. Sales is what gets people frustrated. So if you're leading your sales organization, having them understand the role that they play as a key part of the total organization and how their decisions and their communication or lack of communication impacts all cross-functional teams. Help them recognize that they're part of something bigger than not just sales is probably the most important thing that a sales leader can do.
Oh, wow.
Is bring them down to the fact that everything they do impacts multiple people downstream. And when we start to remove those silos that historically have been built within CPG, and as Martin referenced, cross-functionally, to quote a great leader when I was at Hillshire, Sean Connolly, who now leads ConAgra, he told me day one, when I walked in the building, Hillshire was a rectangle. It is not a pyramid. You have access to anyone at any time. And that is something that stuck with me. Even after we were acquired, it stuck with me. And so I truly believe that, right? That what I do impacts finance, what I do impacts customer service, what I do impacts supply chain. So don't be afraid to recognize what you don't know and encourage and engage with others to educate yourself on how your decision-making impacts other people. Tied it back to servant leadership. What do you do that impacts others and how do you help others be successful?
Liberation, right? Direction, elimination, automation, liberation. Liberate your time so that you learn more. What is it? Leaders or readers? I hate that, but it is so true. I hate that, so cheese, but it is so true. To paraphrase Matt, is really time, right? It comes back to spending time with yourself, making sure that you're proactive instead of reactive.
Correct.
Not a lot of investment in money. It's really about investing your time in the people and giving them the time to make mistakes. So that's really the cost, if you would, or the investment, right? Instead of saying cost, is the investment, right? So,
correct.
Where do people, so I'm assuming you guys are open to having samples and getting the word out. So where can people reach you at, Matt? Is that okay? Is there an email that they can reach you at?
Sure. So if they're interested in Alpha in particular, you can send to info@eatalphafoods.com. My personal email address, I have no problem sharing it, is matthew@eatalphafoods.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. Very active on LinkedIn. I publish and post things articles about servant leadership, about plant-based world that is occurring around us. I stay away from anything political on LinkedIn because I don't believe that's an opportunity for that space. And so I keep it only about things that are important to help organizations be successful.
I think the only political statement we should state is that your nuggets and your chicken patties are to be voted number one.
Correct. And check out Alpha Foods on all the social media, right? We have Instagram, we have Pinterest, we have Facebook. We post recipes. We're even on TikTok, if you're on TikTok.
Oh, damn. So, man, I'm too old for TikTok. I don't do that dance thing. thank you very, very much, Matt. I know that the listeners will... I've taken a lot out of it. My notebook is got full of stuff. So appreciate your time, Matt. And thank you very much, everybody. This was Martin Hunter from What CEOs Talk About, where we translate strategies into frontline operations. Thanks a lot, Matt.
Thanks for tuning in to What CEOs Talk About. Make sure to click subscribe to get notified about future episodes or check us out at www.whatceostalkabout.com.